Coming from Ballymena, I suppose my interest in St. Patrick was first raised as a boy when every morning on the way to school I could see Mount Slemish. And as every schoolboy knows, that's where St. Patrick tended his sheep. So from very early on, I had an awareness of the man we call St. Patrick. But what do we really know about St. Patrick? Well, historians tell us that practically everything that we think we know about St. Patrick is almost certainly a myth. Almost everything. We don't know if he ever tended sheep on Slemish, or even if these were the sheep themselves. We don't know if he was ever near Croagh Patrick or Lough Derg. We don't know if he was the first bishop of Armagh. We don't know if he's buried under that big stone in Downpatrick. And we don't know if he ever explained the Trinity using a shamrock. What we do know is contrary to popular opinion. He didn't drive the snakes out of Ireland. The snakes very wisely never came to Ireland. It was too cold. He didn't compose his most famous hymn, the Lorica, known as St. Patrick's Breastplate. It dates from at least a century after his death. He didn't even bring Christianity to Ireland. Instead, when Patrick came as a missionary to Ireland around 432, there were already Christians in Ireland. This man in the picture, Pope Celestine, had written a letter about the Christians in Ireland prior to Patrick ever arriving. And one thing we really know for sure is he looked nothing like this. The fact is that we know very, very little about the man called St. Patrick. One historian has written that everything we know about Patrick can in fact be summed up in about 250 words. That's about one sheet of A4, double-spaced, size 12 font. Now, this lack of factual information about St. Patrick has resulted in people filling in the gaps and reinventing Patrick in their own image. And this is a practice that has been going on for centuries. This is where many of the myths surrounding Patrick have in fact arisen. Indeed, many St. Patrick's Day traditions are in fact fairly recent traditions and have been exported around the world not from Ireland but from the United States, where, for example, in Chicago, every St. Patrick's Day they turn the river green. So that come St. Patrick's Day, millions of people around the world will celebrate St. Patrick, and they will do so in many diverse places, like Japan. Some Japanese people are celebrating St. Patrick. And of course, you paint the pyramids green on St. Patrick's Day as well. And people, I say, around the world will remember St. Patrick, celebrate St. Patrick's Day without knowing anything about him. And as they do so, they will consume more than twice the amount of Guinness consumed on an average day. An average 13 million pints of Guinness will be drunk on St. Patrick's Day. Well, given the propensity for myth-making surrounding St. Patrick, it is my task this evening to try to get at the man, if you like, behind the myths. And in doing so, I want to give you a bit of an insight into St. Patrick, and especially what really made him tick. All that we know about Patrick with any degree of certainty comes from the only two pieces of writing that we know come from his hand and that have been preserved for us. The first of these are his confession, and the second is his letter to Caroticus. And it's from these that we glean our knowledge of Patrick. Patrick was born around about 390 AD. He was born the son of a Roman official, a man who was also a church deacon. And he was born in the town of Bavanum Taberniae, which is probably somewhere in the north of England. He seems to have had a reasonably affluent upbringing, and he was at least nominally a Christian. However, his comfortable existence was shattered around the age of 16, when he, along with thousands of others, was captured by pirates. And pirate attacks were not uncommon during this period. The Roman legions had begun to withdraw from Britain. Britain was left largely undefended, and the pirates from around the coast of the British Isles sought to take advantage of this. The pirates took Patrick to Ireland, and he spent the next 6 years there tending sheep. Again, no one is quite sure where in Ireland he was, but it seems somewhere, or it seems likely that he was somewhere in the northwest, probably somewhere close to the Atlantic Ocean. It was during this time that Patrick turned to God. And there, in the midst of all the deprivations of slavery, he felt comfort from God. He later wrote that he spent that time in Ireland with the Spirit of God burning within me. After 6 years, Patrick received a vision from God that there was a ship waiting to take him home again. And he escaped and went in search of that ship, but it turned out the ship was about 200 miles away. And even then, once he was aboard the ship, this wasn't the end of his difficulties, for the ship landed in a desolate region, possibly Gaul, which is today modern France. And once he was there and his companions got off the ship, they discovered there was no food in the land at this time. It seems there may have been a scorched earth policy because of the wars that were going on in the region at this time. And he and his companions almost starved to death. Well, it seems that eventually Patrick escaped this situation, and he then stayed in Gaul and began to train for the priesthood. And after this, it appears he was eventually reunited for a short time with his family back in Britain. And it was around this time then that Patrick received a series of visions and dreams that convinced him that God was calling him back to Ireland as a missionary. And in the most famous of these visions, he heard the people of Ireland call to him, "We beg you, holy boy, to come and walk again among us." The result of these visions, Patrick returned to Ireland probably about 20 years after he had previously left. Later he wrote, "I testify in truth and in great joy of heart before God and his holy angels that I never had any other reason for returning to that nation from which I had earlier escaped, except the gospel and God's promises." Now, once in Ireland, Patrick carried on mission work amongst those who were still steeped in paganism and idolatry. And there he endured many hardships as he sought to preach the gospel. He wrote that, "I bore insults from unbelievers, so that I would hear the hatred directed at me for traveling here. I bore many persecutions, even chains, so that I could give up my freeborn state for the sake of others." And all of this so that he could fulfill the Great Commission and heed Jesus' teaching, where Jesus had commanded him to follow him, "And I will make you fishers of men." But while Patrick's work in Ireland was tough, it was also a work that saw great fruit. Thousands of people were converted and baptized. As he wrote, "Never before did they know of God except to serve idols and unclean things. But now they have become the people of the Lord and are called the children of God." Many, as was the practice in those days, became monks and nuns so that they might devote themselves more fully to God. Many of them founded monastic communities where they could live together. Patrick also founded churches, and he installed clergy to lead those churches. As he would later state, "I have traveled everywhere among you for your own sake, in many dangers and even to the furthest parts where nobody lived beyond, and where nobody ever went to baptize and to ordain clerics or to bring people to fulfillment." Patrick continued relentlessly on his mission for around 30 years, carrying the message of Christ to what he believed, and everyone believed in those days, was the very ends of the earth. You couldn't go further than Ireland. So here he was fulfilling Jesus' commission to take the gospel he believed to the ends of the earth. And all that time he did not feel one whit of Irishness. All that time, he said, I was still an alien among non-Roman peoples, an exile on account of the love of God. And it seems that even at the end of his life, this man who had been through so much in Ireland was actually still homesick to be back in Britain. Well, he died around 460 AD. As legend would later have it, he died on the 17th of March. And we hear nothing more about Patrick until he's mentioned in a letter more than 150 years later. And that's it. That's it. That's pretty much everything we know about Patrick. Anything else that I might say about Patrick this evening would pretty much be speculation. However, alongside this brief outline of his life, we can, I think, also gain through his writings an insight into the mind of Patrick. We can begin to get a bit of an insight into what it is that makes him tick and what it is that shapes his life. And it's that I want to tease out for us a little bit this evening and for us to think together about. This microphone seems to keep riding up my head further and further. It's something to do with the unusual shape of my head, but there you have it. And the first thing I want us to think about is Patrick's turning point. It's tempting to think of the great turning point in Patrick's life as his kidnap from his home. A young man torn away from his parents in a raid by brutal pirates. However, for Patrick, this was only the prelude to the greatest turning point in his life. He wrote in his confession, it was there in Ireland that the Lord opened up my awareness of my lack of faith. Even though it came about late, I recognized my failings. So I turned with all my heart to the Lord my God. And he looked down on my lowliness and had mercy on my youthful ignorance. Once in Ireland, he was torn away from all that was familiar to him. He was alone amongst people who knew nothing of the Christian faith. He himself had held to that Christian faith very, very lightly. But once in Ireland, he began to see the reality of what it was to live amongst a pagan people, to live amongst people who had no thought of God, no thought of the Christian faith. And so he saw the reality of paganism with its gods and goddesses. He saw how people lived in superstitious captivity to the spirit world around them that they believed inhabited the trees and the animals and the fields. He saw paganism with its human sacrifices and its animal sacrifices to appease the spirits. He saw how people used alcohol in great excess to search for religious experience. And he saw how people abandoned themselves to sexual license in order to increase the fertility of themselves, their livestock, and their land. Here was a human society where life was cheap and where he experienced what it was to be treated brutally. And it was there in Ireland, as his life came crashing down around him, that God found Patrick. And as is so often the case, before our hearts can be open to God, he must bring us to an end of ourselves. This is what happened to Patrick. And out of that experience, God spoke to him and drew him to himself. Patrick writes, more and more, the love of God increased, and my sense of awe before God. Faith grew, and my spirit was moved, so that in one day I would pray up to 100 times, and at night perhaps the same. In many ways, Patrick's story is reminiscent of a story Jesus told that we read in Luke's Gospel in chapter 15. And it's a story of a young man who asked his father for his inheritance. and then went and blew that inheritance on what we might call today the partygoer's lifestyle. In fact, he wasted his money to such an extent that he had to take up a job as a pig herd. And he probably did so in order to pay his debts. It was such a lowly job that he actually came to envy what the pigs were eating. That's pretty low, isn't it? You actually envy pig food. There he was at his lowest ebb. But there Jesus tells us he came to his senses, saying to himself, "How many of my father's hired servants have food to spare? And here I am, starving to death." And with that, he decided to return home to his father. He, of course, feared that his father would reject him. But his father didn't reject him. In fact, he welcomed him with open arms and he celebrated his return. And Jesus told this story as an illustration of the gospel, an illustration of the good news, that it's when we are at our lowest ebb that God can bring us to our senses. It's when we're at our lowest ebb that God can fill our hearts with thoughts of returning to him. And when we do return to him, we find that God does not rebuke us. Rather, God, like the father in the story, rushes out to meet us. He lovingly embraces us. And with great joy, he welcomes us home. It's the story of the young man in the story that Jesus told. But it's also the story of Patrick. That it was at his lowest point, when he feared that he had rejected God and treated the things of God so lightly, that God spoke to him. And there, in the middle of that brutalized existence, there at his lowest ebb, God welcomed him home. And he found in God a joy that could not be matched even by that life of frivolous ease that he had enjoyed at home. I wonder this evening, can you in any way identify with Patrick? Perhaps you too this evening are a young person and Christianity sits lightly with you. You go through the motions. You know all the right things to say and to do. But perhaps you're living off the faith of your parents. And you know deep down, you know in yourself that you're only playing the game. That you can put Christianity off and on just as the circumstances suit you. And I wonder this evening, will you have to be brought low like the prodigal son? Will you have to be brought low like Patrick before you will respond to God's love and the great salvation that he offers you in his son? Or perhaps you are someone this evening who already feels that you're at rock bottom. You're someone who wonders where you can turn or to whom you can turn. Well, as with the prodigal son, as with Patrick, you need to realize this evening that God loves you. God loves you and longs to welcome you home. And if you will turn to God, he will run to greet you. He will embrace you in his loving arms and accept you into his home and into his family. It's hard to think of a more desperate case than that of Patrick. And yet, as a slave in that foreign land, far from his family, amongst a wild people who treated him brutally, he discovered in God a sense of love and joy and hope that went beyond the earthly circumstances in which he found himself. Second thing that we might see in Patrick's life is that he knew the reality of suffering. Patrick knew great suffering throughout his life. There was his kidnap and 6 years of cruel enslavement. Even when he escaped, it was to a land where he almost died of starvation, traveling for around 30 days without food or water. He also knew the reality of personal opposition, those who opposed his mission in Ireland. He was slandered about his motives, and past failures were cast up against him, even by one he considered his closest friend. And once in Ireland, his missionary journey frequently met with opposition, and he ended up imprisoned. And even when his work was established, some of his converts were attacked by raiders who murdered some of them and enslaved others. It was something that caused him deep anguish to the very end of his life. However, through this life of suffering, he also came to see something of the purposes of God. He saw, for example, that it was through his suffering that God brought him to the realization that he was a sinner in need of salvation. He writes of his kidnap, "We deserved this because we had gone away from God and did not keep his commandments. We would not listen to our priests who advised us about how we could be saved. The Lord brought his strong anger upon us and scattered us among many nations, even to the ends of the earth. It was among foreigners that it was seen how little I was." But he continues, "It was there that the Lord opened up my awareness of my lack of faith. Even though it came about late, I recognized my failings. So I turned with all my heart to the Lord my God, and he looked down on my lowliness and had mercy on my youthful ignorance." And all of this he came to see formed part of the purpose of God in his life. He wrote, "He guarded me before I knew him. And before I came to wisdom and could distinguish between good and evil, he protected me and consoled me as a father does his son." God's hand had been upon him, even when he did not acknowledge God. God's hand had been upon him when he cared nothing for God. And through his hardships and through his sufferings, God was shaping and directing his life. He also came to see that he had not endured his kidnap and captivity, if he had not endured his kidnap and captivity, then he would never have become a missionary to the Irish. So he could write, "I am greatly in debt to God. He gave me such great grace that through me many people would be born again in God and brought to full life." God's purposes for Patrick were much, much greater than he could ever have imagined. And from Patrick's example, we can learn to think about the trials and sufferings in our lives. That whenever we suffer and undergo trials in our lives, these things are not happening to us randomly. They're not things that lie beyond the knowledge of God or lie beyond the control of God. But they're instruments in the hands of God for our spiritual good and often for the advance of his kingdom in the world. In that respect, Patrick is like another young man we read of in the Bible, a young man called Joseph. Joseph was hated by his brothers to the extent that they sold him into slavery in a foreign land. Joseph was then falsely accused, imprisoned, and left to rot. But from his experience, Joseph rose to a position in Egypt which enabled him to rescue his family when their lives were threatened by famine. And so Joseph was able to look back across his life and say to his brothers, "You intended to harm me, but God intended it for good, to accomplish what is now being done, the saving of many lives." Patrick discovered, as Joseph did, that in the midst of suffering, we can trust in God. He is the God who works out his purposes even through the suffering of his people. He is, as Paul writes, the God who works all things together for good, for those who love him and who are called according to his purpose. God works through the hardships and sufferings to accomplish our eternal good and his eternal purposes. The other thing that Patrick then discovered through his sufferings and trials was the sufficiency of God's grace to sustain him through those trials. If you read Patrick's confession, you will discover that the theme of God's grace runs through it like a thread. So he writes, I'll never stop giving thanks to my God, who kept me faithful in the time of my temptation. I can today with confidence offer my soul to Christ my Lord as a living victim. He is the one who defended me in all my difficulties. I can say, who am I, Lord, or what is my calling, that you have worked with me with such divine presence. Indeed, he recognized the sufficiency of God's grace throughout his life, writing, from the time in my youth that I came to know him, the love and reverence for God grew in me, and so far with the Lord's help I have kept the faith. And I want to give thanks to God without ceasing. He frequently forgave my lack of wisdom and my negligence, and more than once did not become very angry with me. The one who was meant to be his helper, the Lord was merciful to me 1,000,000 times. Patrick's life was far from being a life of ease, but it was a life in which he proved, as the Apostle Paul had before him, the truth of God's promise. My grace is sufficient for you, for my power is made perfect in weakness. It's a promise that many have clung to and been sustained by in the trials and the tribulations of the Christian life, that God is faithful. His grace is sufficient. As such, trials and sufferings are part of the reality of the Christian life. J.C. Ryle, the famous Church of England bishop of the 19th century, wrote that the Christian way is one that is marked by losses and crosses. God's great promise to us is not ease upon the Christian way. It is the promise of the sufficiency of his grace as he completes the good work that he has begun in us. As Patrick came to realize, I come to praise and magnify your name among the nations all the time, wherever I am, not only in good times, but in the difficult times too. Whatever comes about for me, good or bad, I ought to accept them equally and give thanks to God. Third and final lesson that we might learn from Patrick is about his passion for the gospel. Many of Patrick's trials and difficulties arose from his commitment to the gospel. For Patrick burned with a passion for the gospel. This was an essential part of his conversion, that God placed in his heart that burning desire to proclaim the gospel, so that he could write, I was far different then in his youth from what I am now, and I have care for others, and I have enough to do to save them. In those days, I didn't even have concern for my own welfare. And central to that burning concern for the gospel was his burning desire to reach the Irish for the gospel. And as you read through his work, this theme of his passion to proclaim the gospel is evident, and especially his desire to proclaim the gospel to the Irish. And we see in his writings a fourfold motivation to proclaim the gospel. First of all, there was his personal sense of call. His personal sense of call. Something we've already mentioned, that Patrick had this clear sense that God had called him to preach to the Irish. Indeed, it was Christ, he said, who told me to come here to be with these people for the rest of my life. Secondly, we see his obedience to Scripture. It's clear from Patrick's confession that he had a strong sense of God's great plan of salvation, to call a people to himself from every language and tribe and people and nation. And so he quotes from both the Old Testament and the New Testament to demonstrate that the gospel is to be proclaimed to all people everywhere. He quotes from the Great Commission twice, once from Matthew's gospel and once from Mark's, that Jesus sends us into all the world to preach the gospel. Whilst he sees in the fulfillment of Joel 2 and the day of Pentecost, the beginning of this work of which he is privileged to be a part of. Indeed, Patrick sees his mission to the Irish, that it will be the completion of the Great Commission. For as I said, he thought of Ireland as the very ends of the earth. preached the gospel to the Irish he believed in the Lord would return. Thirdly, we see his conviction of judgment. This third factor clearly motivates Patrick, that he's convinced that there is a coming day of judgment. It's a day in which he must give an account to God. So whenever he was tempted to stay in Britain with his parents, he noted, "But I am bound in the Spirit, who assures me that if I were to do this, I would be held guilty." But he also recognizes that it's a day in which everyone must give an account to God. And so he speaks of that day where nobody can avoid or escape, but all shall give complete account of the least of sins before the tribunal of the Lord Jesus Christ. The only hope for mankind, for Patrick, was that they might hear and respond to the message of God's mercy. His fourth motivation was his heart of joy. Although Patrick had this sense of accountability before God for preaching the gospel, he wasn't simply driven by some craven fear. Instead, he was driven by the sheer joy of his salvation. He writes, "This I know for certain, that before I was brought low, I was like some stone lying deep in the mud. Then he who is powerful came and in his mercy pulled me out and lifted me up and placed me on the top of the wall. That is why I must shout aloud in return to the Lord for such great good deeds of his, here and now and forever, deeds which the human mind cannot measure." As I said, when Patrick died, he was, it seems, all but forgotten for almost 200 years. But historians are broadly in agreement that what Patrick did bring to the Irish church was a great impetus towards mission, a mission that had carried on for centuries after Patrick, with Irishmen like Columba, Columbanus, and Aidan playing key roles in the mission of the church. And Patrick's burning passion for the gospel still challenges us today. It challenges us to ask, does that same passion for the spread of the gospel also burn in our hearts today? Are we open to the call of God upon our lives? Are we seeking to be obedient to the Great Commission? Do we understand that the heart of the gospel is that the Lord Jesus Christ is calling to himself a people from every language and tribe and people and nation? Do we long to see the gospel preached to the ends of the earth? When we live in an age when 42% of the world's population, 42% of the world's population have never heard the gospel and more than have no opportunity to hear the gospel. Do we live with a conviction that we must give an account to God for what we have done with the gospel? Are we burdened by the fact that without hearing the message of the mercy of God and the gospel, people are lost for all eternity? Do we so marvel at the grace of God in our own lives that we have that joyful longing to tell others of what God has done for us? As I said at the outset, we don't know much about the real Patrick, about his life. He has, across the centuries, been shrouded in myth. And come St. Patrick's Day, all those myths will be rolled out again, both ancient and modern. But I believe that what we do know about Patrick continues to place an example and a challenge before us today. Patrick was no plaster saint. Rather, he was a humble man. He introduces himself in both his writings as Patrick, a sinner. He was a man without great learning. And throughout his life, he viewed himself as a simple country boy. But he never ceased to marvel at the grace of God in his life, that God should have saved a weak and lowly boy such as him and turned him into a herald of the gospel. As such, it was his joy to give his life in the service of Christ and his gospel, saying, "This is why I cannot be silent. nor would it be good to do so, about such great blessings and such a gift that the Lord so kindly bestowed in the land of my captivity. This is how we can repay such blessing. When our lives change and we come to know God, to praise and bear witness to his great wonders before every nation under heaven.